Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert A. Heinlein continued. Cassette 3, Side 2. Anne is a fair witness?
Graduate, unlimited license, admitted to testify before the High Court. Sometime ask her why she gave up public practice, but don't plan anything else that day. The wench will recite the whole truth and nothing but the truth, which takes time. Back to Mr. Cavendish. Ben retained him for open witnessing, full disclosure, without enjoining privacy. So when Cavendish was questioned, he answered in boring detail. The interesting part is what he does not say. He never states that the man they saw was not the man from Mars, but not one word indicates that Cavendish accepted the exhibit as being the man from Mars. If you knew Cavendish, this would be conclusive. If Cavendish had seen Mike, he would have reported with such exactness that you and I would know that he had seen Mike. For example, Cavendish reports the shape of this exhibit's ears, and it does not match Mike's ears. QED, they were shown a phony. Cavendish knows it, though he is professionally restrained from giving opinions.
I told you, they never came near my floor.
But it tells us more. This occurred hours before you pulled your jailbreak. Cavendish sets their arrival in the presence of the phony at 9:14 Thursday morning, so the government had Mike under their thumb at that moment. They could have exhibited Mike. Yet they risked offering a phony to the most noted fair witness in the country. Why?
Jill answered. You're asking me? I don't know. Ben told me that he intended to ask Mike if he wanted to leave the hospital, and help him if he said yes.
Which Ben did try, with the phony.
So? But, Jubal, they couldn't have known that Ben intended to. And anyhow, Mike wouldn't have left with Ben.
Later he left with you.
Yes, but I was his water brother, just as you are now. He has this crazy idea that he can trust anyone with whom he has shared a drink of water. With a water brother, he is docile. With anybody else, he is stubborn as a mule. Ben couldn't have budged him.
She added,
At least, that is the way he was last week. He's changing awfully fast.
So he is. Too fast, maybe. I've never seen muscle tissue develop so rapidly. Never mind. Back to Ben. Cavendish reports that Ben dropped him and the lawyer, a chap named Frisbee, at 9:31, and Ben kept the cab. An hour later, he, or somebody who said he was Ben, phoned that message to Paoli Flat.
You don't think it was Ben?
I do not. Cavendish reported the number of the cab, and my scouts tried to get a look at its daily trip tape. If Ben used his credit card, his charge number should be on the tape, but even if he fed coins into the meter, the tape should show where the cab had been.
Well?
Harshaw shrugged. The records show that cab in for repairs, and never in use Thursday morning. So either a fair witness misremembered a cab's number, or somebody tampered with the record.
He added,
Maybe a jury would decide that even a fair witness could misread a number, especially if he had not been asked to remember it. But I don't believe it, not when the witness is James Oliver Cavendish. He would either be certain, or his report would never mention it.
Harshaw scowled.
Jill, you're forcing me to rub my nose in it. And I don't like it. Granted that Ben could have sent that message, it is most unlikely that he could tamper with the record of that cab, and still less believable that he had reason to. Ben went somewhere, and somebody who could get at the records of a public carrier went to a lot of trouble to conceal where he went, and sent a phony message to keep anyone from realizing that he had disappeared.
Disappeared? Kidnapped, you mean?
Softly, Jill. Kidnapped is a dirty word.
It's the only word. Jubal, how can you sit there when you ought to be shouting it from the...
Stop it, Jill. Instead of kidnapped, Ben might be dead.
Jillian slumped. Yes, she agreed dully.
But we'll assume he is not until we see his bones. Jill, what's the greatest danger about kidnapping?
It is a hue and cry, because a frightened kidnapper almost always kills his victim.
Jillian looked woeful.
Harshaw went on gently.
I'm forced to say that it is likely that Ben is dead. He has been gone too long. But we've agreed to assume that he is alive. Now you intend to look for him. Jillian, how will you do this, without increasing the risk that Ben will be killed by the unknown parties who kidnapped him?
But we know who they are.
Do we?
Of course. The same people who kept Mike a prisoner, the government.
Harshaw shook his head. That's an assumption. Ben has made many enemies with his column, and not all of them are in government. However, Harshaw frowned, Your assumption is all we have to go on. But it's too sweeping. The government is several million people. We must ask ourselves whose toes were stepped on. What individuals?
Why, Jubal, I told you, just as Ben told me. The Secretary General himself.
No, Harshaw denied. No matter who did what. If it is rough or illegal, it won't be the Secretary General. Even if he benefits, nobody could prove that he even knew it. It is likely he would not know it. Not about rough stuff. Jill, we need to find out which lieutenant in the Secretary General's staff of stooges handled this operation. That isn't as hopeless as it sounds, I think. When Ben was taken to see that phony, one of Douglas's assistants was with him. Tried to talk him out of it, then went with him. It now appears that this same top-level stooge also dropped out of sight last Thursday. I don't think it's coincidence, since he appears to have been in charge of the phony man from Mars. If we find him, we may find Ben. Gilbert Berquist is his name, and I have reason...
Berquist?
That's the name. I have reason to... Jill, what's the trouble? Don't faint or I'll dunk you in the pool.
Jubal, this Berquist... Is there more than one Berquist?
Eh? He does seem to be a bit of a bastard. There might be only one. I mean the one on the executive staff. Do you know him?
I don't know. But if it is the same one, I don't think there's any use looking for him.
Talk, girl.
Jubal. I'm terribly sorry, but I didn't tell you everything.
People rarely do. All right, out with it.
Stumbling and stammering, Jillian told about the men who had disappeared. And that's all, she concluded sadly. I screamed and scared Mike, and he went into that trance. And then I had a terrible time getting here. I told you about that.
Yes. I wish you had told me this, too.
She turned red. I didn't think anybody would believe me, and I was scared. Jubal, can they do anything to us?
Eh?
Jubal seemed surprised. Send us to jail or something?
Oh. My dear, it is not a crime to be present at a miracle, nor to work one. But this has more aspects than a cat has hair. Let me think.
Jubal held still about 10 minutes. Then he opened his eyes and said,
I don't see your problem, child. He's probably on the bottom of the pool.
He is.
So dive in and get him. Bring him to my study. I want to see if he can repeat this. And we don't want an audience. No, we need one. Tell Anne to put on a witness robe. I want her in her official capacity. I want Duke, too.
Yes, boss.
You're not privileged to call me boss. You're not tax-deductible.
Yes, Jubal.
I wish we had somebody who never would be missed. Can Mike do this stunt with inanimate objects?
I don't know.
We'll find out. Haul him out and wake him up.
Jubal blinked.
What a way to dispose of... No, I mustn't be tempted. See you upstairs, girl.
Chapter 12. A few minutes later, Jill reported to Jubal's study. Anne was there in the white robe of her guild. She glanced up, said nothing. Jill found a chair and kept quiet, as Jubal was dictating to Dorcas. He did not look up, and went on.
Under the sprawled body, soaking a corner of the rug and seeping out in a dark red pool on the hearth where it was attracting the attention of 2 unemployed flies. Miss Simpson clutched at her mouth. Dear me, she said in a distressed voice, Daddy's favorite rug. And Daddy, too, I do believe. End of chapter, Dorcas, and a first installment. Mail it off. Git.
Dorcas left, taking her shorthand machine and smiling to Jill. Jubal said,
Where's Mike?
Dressing, answered Jillian. He'll be along soon.
Dressing, Jubal repeated peevishly. I didn't say the party was formal.
But he has to dress.
Why, it makes no never mind whether you kids wear skin or overcoats. Chase him in.
Please, Jubal, he's got to learn.
Humph! You're forcing on him your own narrow-minded middle-class Bible Belt morality.
I am not. I'm simply teaching him necessary customs.
Customs, morals, is there a difference? Woman, here by the grace of God and an inside straight, we have a personality untouched by the psychotic taboos of our tribe, and you want to turn him into a copy of every fourth-rate conformist in this frightened land. Why not go whole hog, get him a briefcase?
I'm not doing anything of the sort. I'm just trying to keep him out of trouble. It's for his own good.
Jubal snorted. That's the excuse they gave the tomcat before his operation.
Oh. Jill appeared to count 10. She said bleakly,
This is your house, Dr. Harshaw, and we are in your debt. I will fetch Michael at once. She stood up.
Hold it, Jill.
Sir?
Sit down and quit trying to be as nasty as I am. You don't have my years of practice. Now, let's get something straight. You are not in my debt. Impossible, because I never do anything I don't want to. Nor does anyone, but in my case, I know it. So please don't invent a debt that does not exist, or next you will be trying to feel gratitude, and that is the treacherous first step toward complete moral degradation. You grok that?
Jill bit her lip, then grinned.
I'm not sure what grok means.
Nor I. I intend to go on taking lessons from Mike until I do. But I was speaking seriously. Gratitude is a euphemism for resentment. Resentment from most people I do not mind, but from pretty little girls it is distasteful.
Why, Jubal, I don't resent you. That's silly.
I hope you don't. But you will if you don't root out of your mind this delusion that you are indebted to me. The Japanese have 5 ways to say thank you, and everyone translates as resentment in various degrees. Would that English had the same built-in honesty? Instead, English can define sentiments that the human nervous system is incapable of experiencing. Gratitude, for example.
Jubal, you're a cynical old man. I do feel grateful to you, and I shall go on feeling grateful.
And you are a sentimental young girl. That makes us a complimentary pair. Let's go to Atlantic City for a weekend of illicit debauchery, just us two.
Why, Jubal?
You see how deep your gratitude goes?
Oh, I'm ready. When do we leave?
Hump. We should have left 40 years ago. The second point is that you are right. Mike must learn human customs. He must take off his shoes in a mosque, wear his hat in a synagogue, and cover his nakedness when taboo requires, or our shamans will burn him for deviationism. But, child, by the myriad aspects of Ahriman, don't brainwash him. Make sure he is cynical about it.
I'm not sure I can. Mike doesn't seem to have any cynicism in him.
So? Well, I'll lend a hand. Shouldn't he be dressed by now?
I'll go see.
In a moment, Jill. I explained why I'm not anxious to accuse anyone of kidnapping Ben. If Ben is unlawfully detained, to put it at its sweetest, we have not crowded anyone into getting rid of evidence by getting rid of Ben. If he is alive, he stands a chance of staying alive. But I took other steps the first night you were here. You know your Bible?
Not very well.
It merits study. It contains practical advice for most emergencies. Everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, John something or other, Jesus to Nicodemus. I have been expecting an attempt to get Mike away from us, for it didn't seem likely that you had covered your tracks. But this is a lonely place, and we haven't any heavy artillery. There is one weapon that might balk them. Light, the glaring spotlight of publicity. So I arrange for any ruckus here to have publicity, not just a little that might be hushed up, but great gobs, worldwide and all at once. Details do not matter, where cameras are mounted and what linkages have been rigged, but if a fight breaks out here, it will be seen by 3 networks and hold for release messages will be delivered to a spread of VIPs, all of whom would like to catch our Honorable Secretary General with his pants down.
Harshaw frowned.
But I can't maintain it indefinitely. When I set it up, my worry was to move fast enough. I expected trouble at once. Now I think we are going to have to force action, while I can still keep a spotlight on us.
What sort of action, Jubal?
I've been fretting about it the past 3 days. You gave me a glimmering of an approach with that story of what happened in Ben's apartment.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner, Jubal. I didn't think anybody would believe me, and it makes me feel good that you do.
I didn't say I believed you.
What? But you...
I think you told the truth, Jill. But a dream is a true experience of a sort, and so is a hypnotic delusion. But what happens in this room during the next hour will be seen by a fair witness and by cameras, which are,
he pressed a button,
rolling now. I don't think Anne can be hypnotized when she's on duty, and I'll lay odds that cameras can't be. We will find out what kind of truth we're dealing with, after which we can consider how to force the powers that be to drop the other shoe. And maybe figure a way to help Ben, too. Go get Mike.
Mike's delay was not mysterious. He had tied his left shoestring to his right, had stood up, tripped himself, fallen flat, and jerked the knots almost hopelessly tight. He spent the rest of the time analyzing his predicament, and slowly getting the snarl untied, and the strings correctly tied. He was not aware that he had taken long, but was troubled that he had failed to repeat correctly something which Jill had taught him. He confessed his failure, even though he had it repaired when she came to fetch him. She soothed him, combed his hair, herded him in. Harshaw looked up.
"Hi, son. Sit down."
"Hi, Jubal," Valentine Michael Smith answered gravely, sat down, waited. Harshaw said,
"Well, boy, what have you learned today?"
Smith smiled happily, then answered, as always, with a pause. "I have today learned to do a 1.5 gainer, that is, a jumping, a dive, for entering our water, by..."
"I know, I saw you. Keep your toes pointed, knees straight, and feet together."
Smith looked unhappy.
"I rightly did not it do?" "You did it very rightly for a first time. Watch Dorcas."
Smith considered this. "The water groks Dorcas. It cherishes him."
"Her. Dorcas is her, not him."
"Her," Smith corrected. "Then my speaking was false? I have read in Webster's New International Dictionary of the English Language, 3rd edition, published in Springfield, Massachusetts, that the masculine gender includes the feminine gender in speaking. In Hagworth's Law of Contracts, 5th edition, Chicago, Illinois, 1978, on page 1012, it says..."
"Hold it,"
Harshaw said hastily.
"Masculine forms do include the feminine when you're speaking in general, but not when talking about a particular person. Dorcas is always she or her, never he or him."
"I will remember."
"You had better, or you may provoke Dorcas into proving just how female she is."
Harshaw blinked thoughtfully.
"Jill, is the lad sleeping with you, or one of you?"
She hesitated, then answered flatly, "So far as I know, Mike doesn't sleep."
"You evaded my question."
"Then you can assume that I intended to. However, he is not sleeping with me."
"Damn it. My interest is scientific. Mike, what else have you learned?"
"I have learned two ways to tie my shoes. One way is only good for lying down. The other way is good for walking. And I have learned conjugations. I am, thou art, he is, we are, you are, they are, I was, thou wast."
"Okay, that's enough. What else?"
Mike smiled delightedly. "To yesterday I am learning to drive the tractor brightly, brightly, and with beauty."
"Eh?"
Jubal turned to Jill.
"When was this?"
"Yesterday while you were napping, Jubal. It's all right. Duke was careful not to let him get hurt."
Well, obviously he didn't. Mike, have you been reading?"
"Yes, Jubal."
"What?"
"I have read," Mike recited, "3 more volumes of the encyclopedia, Mary B. to Mush E., Mush R. to Ozon, P. to Plant I. You have told me not to read too much of the encyclopedia at one reading, so I then stopped. I then read The Tragedy of Romeo and Juliet by Master William Shakespeare of London. I then read The Memoirs of Jacques Casanova de Saint-Galt, as translated into English by Arthur Machen. I then read The Art of Cross-Examination by Francis Wellman. I then tried to grok what I'd read until Jill told me that I must come to breakfast."
"And did you grok it?"
Smith looked troubled. "Jubal, I do not know."
"Something bothering you?"
"I do not grok all fullness of what I read. In the history written by Master William Shakespeare, I found myself full of happiness at the death of Romeo. Then I read on and learned that he had discorporated too soon. Or so I thought I grokked." "Why?"
"He was a blithering young idiot."
"Beg pardon?"
"I don't know, Mike."
Smith considered this. Then he muttered in Martian and added, "I am only an egg."
"Eh? You say that when you want to ask a favor, Mike. What is it?"
Smith hesitated. Then he blurted, "Jubal, my brother, would please you ask Romeo why he discorporated? I cannot ask him. I am only an egg, but you can. And then you could teach me the grokking of it." Jubal saw that Mike believed that Romeo had been a living person, and managed to grasp that Mike expected him to conjure up Romeo's ghost and demand explanations for his conduct in the flesh. But to explain that the Capulets and Montagues had never had corporated existence was another matter. The concept of fiction was beyond Mike's experience. There was nothing on which it could rest. Jubal's attempts to explain were so upsetting to Mike that Jill was afraid that he was about to roll up into a ball. Mike saw how perilously close he was to that necessity, and had learned that he must not resort to this refuge in the presence of friends, because, with the exception of his brother Dr. Nelson, it caused them emotional disturbance. So he made a mighty effort, slowed his heart, calmed his emotions, and smiled.
I will waiting till a grocking comes of itself.
Good, agreed Jubal. Hereafter, before you read anything, ask me or Jill or somebody whether or not it is fiction. I don't want you mixed up.
I will ask, Jubal.
Mike decided that when he did grok this strange idea, he must report the fullness to the old ones, and found himself wondering if the old ones knew about fiction. The incredible idea that there might be something as strange to the old ones as it was to himself was so much more revolutionary than the weird concept of fiction that he put it aside to cool, saved it for meditation.
But I didn't, his brother Jubal was saying, call you in to discuss literary forms. Mike, remember the day that Jill took you away from the hospital?
Hospital?
Mike repeated. I'm not sure, Jubal, Jill interrupted, that Mike knew it was a hospital. Let me try.
Go ahead.
Mike, you remember where you were, where you lived alone in a room before I dressed you and took you away?
Yes, Jill. Then we went to another place, and I undressed you and gave you a bath. Smith smiled in recollection.
Yes, it was great happiness. Then I dried you off, and two men came?
Smith's smile wiped away. He began to tremble and huddle into himself. Jill said, Mike, stop it! Don't you dare go away! Mike took control of his being.
Yes, Jill.
Listen, Mike, I want you to think about that time, but you mustn't get upset. There were two men. One of them pulled you out into the living room.
The room with the joyful grasses, he agreed.
That's right. He pulled you into the room with the grass floor, and I tried to stop him. He hit me. Then he was gone. You remember?
You are not angry?
What? No, no, not at all. One man disappeared. Then the other pointed a gun at me. And then he was gone. I was frightened, but I was not angry.
You are not angry with me now?
Mike, dear, I have never been angry with you. Jubal and I want to know what happened. Those two men were there. You did something, and they were gone. What was it you did? Can you tell us?
I will tell. The man, the big man, hit you. And I frightened, too. So I...
He croaked in Martian, looked puzzled.
I do not know words.
Jubal said,
Mike, can you explain it a little at a time?
I will try, Jubal. Something is in front of me. It is a wrong thing and must not be. So I reach out.
He looked perplexed.
It is an easy thing. Tying shoelaces is much more hard, but the words not are. I am very sorry.
He considered it.
Perhaps the words are in plants to Ray M, or Ray N to Sar, or Sars to Sork. I will read them tonight and tell you at breakfast.
Maybe, Jubal admitted. Just a minute, Mike.
He went to a corner and returned with a case which had contained brandy.
Can you make this go away?
This is a wrong thing?
Well, assume that it is.
But... Jubal, I must know that it is a wrong thing. This is a box. I do not grok it exists wrongly.
Suppose I picked this up and threw it at Jill.
Smith said with gentle sadness.
Jubal, you would not do that to Jill?
Damn it, I guess not. Jill, will you throw the box at me? Hard, a scalp wound at least, if Mike can't protect me.
Jubal, I don't like the idea.
Oh, come on, in the interest of science. And Ben Caxton.
But...
Jill jumped up, grabbed the box, threw it at Jubal's head.
Jubal intended to stand fast, but reflex won. He ducked.
Missed me, he said. Confound it, I wasn't watching. I meant to keep my eyes on it.
He looked at Smith.
Mike, is that the... What's the matter, boy?
The man from Mars was trembling and looking unhappy. Jill put her arms around him.
There, there, it's all right, dear. You did it beautifully. It never touched Jubal. It simply vanished.
I guess it did, Jubal admitted, looking around and chewing his thumb. And were you watching?
Yes.
What did you see?
The box did not simply vanish. The process lasted some fraction of a second. From where I'm sitting, it appeared to shrink as if it were disappearing into the distance. But it did not go outside the room. I could see it up to the instant it disappeared.
Where did it go?
That is all I can report.
We'll run films later. But I'm convinced. Mike?
Yes, Jubal?
Where is that box?
The box is...
Smith paused.
Again, I have not words. I am sorry.
I'm confused. Son, can you reach in and haul it out?
Beg pardon?
You made it go away. Now make it come back.
How can I? The box is... not.
Jubal looked thoughtful. If this method becomes popular, it'll change the rules for corpus delicti. I've got a little list. They never will be missed. Mike, how close do you have to be?
Beg pardon?
If you had been in the hallway and I'd been back by the window, 30 feet, could you have stopped it from hitting me?
Smith appeared mildly surprised. Yes.
Come to the window. Suppose Jill and I were on the far side of the pool and you were here. Could you have stopped the box?
Yes, Jubal.
Well, suppose Jill and I were down at the gate a quarter of a mile away. Is that too far?
Smith hesitated. Jubal, it is not distance. It is not seeing. It is knowing.
Let's see if I grok it. It doesn't matter how far. You don't even have to see it. If you know that a bad thing is happening, you can stop it. Right?
Smith looked troubled. Almost is right. But I'm not long out of the nest, for knowing I must see. An old one does not need eyes to know. He knows, he groks, he acts. I am sorry.
I don't know why you're sorry, Jubal said gruffly. The High Minister for Peace would have declared you top secret 10 minutes ago.
Beg pardon?
Never mind.
Jubal returned to his desk, picked up a heavy ashtray.
Jill, don't aim at my face. Okay, Mike. Stand in the hallway.
Jubal, my brother. Please not.
What's the trouble? I want one more demonstration, and this time I won't take my eyes off it.
Jubal?
Yes, Jill?
I grok what is bothering Mike.
Well, tell me.
We did an experiment where I was about to hurt you with that box, but we are his water brothers, so it upset Mike that I even tried. I think there is something very un-Martian about such a situation.
Harshaw frowned. Maybe it should be investigated by the Committee on Un-Martian Activities.
I'm not joking, Jubal.
Nor I. All right, Jill. I'll re-rig it.
Harshaw handed the ashtray to Mike.
Feel how heavy it is, son? See those sharp corners?
Smith examined it gingerly. Harshaw went on.
I'm going to throw it up and let it hit me in the head as it comes down.
Mike stared. My brother, you will now discorporate?
Eh? No, no. But it will hurt me unless you stop it. Here we go.
Harshaw tossed it straight up within inches of the high ceiling. The ashtray topped its trajectory. Stopped. Harshaw looked at it, feeling stuck in one frame of a motion picture. He croaked,
Anne, what do you see?
She answered in a flat voice. That ashtray is 5 inches from the ceiling. I do not see anything holding it up. She added, Jubal, I think that's what I'm seeing, but if my cameras don't show the same thing, I'm going to tear up my license.
Jill.
It floats. Jubal went to his desk and sat down without taking his eyes off the ashtray.
Mike,
he said,
why didn't it disappear?
But Jubal, Mike said apologetically, you said to stop it. You did not say to make it go away. When I made the box go away, you wanted it to be again. Have I done wrongly?
Oh, no, you have done exactly right. I keep forgetting that you take things literally.
Harshaw recalled insults common in his early years and reminded himself never to use such to Mike. If he told the boy to drop dead or get lost, Harshaw felt certain that the literal meaning would ensue. I am glad, Smith answered soberly. I am sorry I could not make the box be again. I am sorry twice that I wasted food. Then a necessity was. Or so I grokked.
Eh? What food?
Jill said hastily.
He's talking about those men, Jubal. Berquist and the man with him.
Oh, yes.
Harshaw reflected that he retained un-Martian notions of food.
Mike, don't worry about wasting that food. I doubt if a meat inspector would have passed them. In fact, he added, recalling the Federation convention about long pig, they would have been condemned as unfit to eat. Besides, it was a necessity. You grokked the fullness and acted rightly.
I am much comforted,
Mike answered with relief in his voice.
Only an old one can always be sure of right action at a cusp, and I have much learning to learn and growing to grow before I may join the old ones. Jubal, may I move it? I am tiring.
You want to make it go away? Go ahead.
But I cannot.
Eh? Why not?
Your head is no longer under it. I do not grok wrongness in its being where it is.
Oh. All right, move it.
Harshaw continued to watch, expecting it to float to the spot now over his head and thus regain a wrongness. Instead, the ashtray slanted downward until it was close above his desk, hovered, then came into a landing.
Thank you, Jubal, said Smith.
Eh? Thank you, son.
Jubal picked up the ashtray. It was as commonplace as ever.
Yes, thank you. For the most amazing experience I've had since the hired girl took me up into the attic.
He looked up.
And you trained it, Ryan?
Yes.
Have you seen levitation before?
She hesitated. I've seen what was called telekinesis with dice, but I'm no mathematician and cannot testify that it was telekinesis.
Hell's bells, you wouldn't testify that the sun had risen if the day was cloudy.
How could I? Somebody might be supplying artificial light above the cloud layer. One of my classmates could apparently levitate objects about the mass of a paperclip, but he had to be three drinks drunk. I was not able to examine it closely enough to testify, because I'd been drinking too.
You've never seen anything like this?
No.
I'm through with you professionally. If you want to stay, hang up your robe and drag up a chair.
Thanks, I will. But in view of your lecture about mosques and synagogues, I'll change in my room.
Suit yourself. Wake up Duke and tell him I want the cameras serviced.
Yes, boss. Don't let anything happen until I get back.
Anne headed for the door.
No promises. Mike, sit at my desk. Now, can you pick up that ashtray? Show me.
Yes, Jubal.
Smith reached out and took it in his hand.
No, no.
I did wrongly?
No, it was my mistake. I want to know if you can lift it without touching it.
Yes, Jubal.
Well, are you tired?
No, Jubal.
Then what's the matter? Does it have to have a wrongness?
No, Jubal.
Jubal, Jill interrupted. You haven't told him to. You just asked if he could.
Oh.
Jubal looked sheepish.
Mike, will you please, without touching it, lift that ashtray a foot above the desk?
Yes, Jubal.
The ashtray raised, floated above the desk.
Will you measure, Jubal?
Mike said anxiously.
If I did wrongly, I will move it.
That's fine. Can you hold it? If you get tired, tell me.
I will tell.
Can you lift something else, too, say this pencil? If you can do it, do it.
Yes, Jubal.
The pencil ranged itself by the ashtray. By request, Mike added other articles to the floating objects. Anne returned, pulled up a chair, and silently watched. Duke came in carrying a stepladder, glanced, looked a second time, said nothing, and set up the ladder. At last, Mike said uncertainly,
I am not sure, Jubal.
He seemed to search for a word.
I am idiot in these things.
Don't wear yourself out.
I can think one more. I hope.
A paperweight stirred, lifted, and the dozen-odd floating objects all fell down. Mike seemed about to weep.
Jubal, I am utmostly sorry.
Harshaw patted his shoulder.
You should be proud, son. What you just did is...
Jubal searched for a comparison within Mike's experience.
What you did is harder than tying shoestrings, more wonderful than doing a 1.5 gainer perfectly. You did it, brightly, brightly, and with beauty. You grok?
Mike looked surprised.
I should not feel shame.
You should feel proud.
Yes, Jubal, he answered contentedly.
I feel proud.
Good. Mike, I cannot lift even one ashtray without touching it.
Smith looked startled.
You cannot?
No. Can you teach me?
Yes, Jubal. You...
Smith stopped, looked embarrassed.
I again have not words. I will read and read and read until I find words. Then I will teach my brother.
Don't set your heart on it.
Beg pardon?
Mike, don't be disappointed if you do not find the words. They may not be in the English language.
Smith considered this.
Then I will teach my brother the language of my nest.
You may have arrived 50 years late.
I have acted wrongly?
Not at all. You might start by teaching Jill your language.
It hurts my throat, objected Jill.
Try gargling aspirin.
Jubal looked at her.
That's a feeble excuse, nurse. You're hired as research assistant for Martian linguistics, which includes extra duties as may be necessary. Anne, put her on the payroll and be sure gets in the tax records.
She's been doing her share in the kitchen. Shall I date it back?
Jubal shrugged. Don't bother me with details.
But Jubal, Jill protested, I don't think I can learn Martian.
You can try.
But...
What was that about gratitude? Do you take the job?
Jill bit her lip. I'll take it. Yes, boss. Smith timidly touched her hand.
Jill, I will teach.
Jill patted his. Thanks, Mike. She looked at Harshaw. I'm going to learn it just to spite you.
He grinned at her. That motive I grok. You'll learn it. Mike, what else can you do that we can't?
Smith looked puzzled.
I do not know.
How could he, protested Jill, when he doesn't know what we can and can't do?
Yes. And change that title to assistant for Martian linguistics, culture, and techniques. Jill, in learning their language, you are bound to stumble onto things that are different, really different, and when you do, tell me. And Mike, if you notice anything which you can do but we don't, tell me.
I will tell, Jubal. What things will be these?
I don't know, things like you just did. And being able to stay on the bottom of the pool longer than we can. Duke.
Boss, I've got both hands full of film.
You can talk, can't you? I notice the pool is murky.
I'm going to add precipitant tonight and vacuum it in the morning.
How's the count?
It's okay, the water is safe enough to serve at the table. It just looks messy.
Let it be. I'll let you know when I want it cleaned.
Hell, boss, nobody likes to swim in dishwater.
Anybody too fussy can stay dry. Quit jawing, Duke. Film's ready?
5 minutes.
Good. Mike, do you know what a gun is?
A gun, Smith answered carefully, is a piece of ordnance for throwing projectiles by force of some explosive as gunpowder, consisting of a tube or barrel closed at one end, where the...
Okay, okay. Do you grok it?
I am not sure.
Have you ever seen a gun?
I do not know.
Why, certainly you have, Jill interrupted. Mike, think back to that time we talked about in the room with the grass floor, but don't get upset. One man hit me.
Yes.
The other pointed something at me.
He pointed a bad thing at you.
That was a gun.
I had think that the word for that bad thing might be gun. Webster's New International Dictionary of the English Language, 3rd edition, published in...
That's fine, son,
Harshaw said hastily.
Now listen. If someone points a gun at Jill, what will you do?
Smith paused longer than usual.
You will not be angry if I waste food?
No. Under those circumstances, no one would be angry at you. But I want to know something else. Could you make the gun go away without making the man go away?
Smith considered it.
Save the food.
That isn't what I mean. Could you cause the gun to go away without hurting the man?
Jubal, he would not hurt. I would make the gun go away. The man, I would just stop. He would feel no pain. He would simply discorporate. The food would not damage.
Harshaw sighed.
Yes, I'm sure that's the way it would be. But could you cause to go away just the gun? Not stop the man, not kill him. Just let him go on living?
Smith considered it.
That would be easier than doing both at once. But, Jubal, if I left him corporate, he might still hurt Jill. Or so I grok it.
Harshaw stopped to remind himself that this baby innocent was neither babyish nor innocent, was in fact sophisticated in a culture which he was beginning to realize was far in advance of human culture in mysterious ways, and that these naive remarks came from a superman, or what would do for a superman. He answered Smith, choosing words carefully, as he had in mind a dangerous experiment.
Mike, if you reach a cusp where you must do something to protect Jill, you do it.
Yes, Jubal, I will.
Don't worry about wasting food. Don't worry about anything else. Protect Jill.
Always I will protect Jill.
Good. But suppose a man pointed a gun, or simply had it in his hand. Suppose you did not want to kill him, but needed to make the gun go away. Could you do it?
Mike paused briefly.
I think I grok it. A gun is a wrong thing, but it might be needful for the man to remain corporate.
He thought.
I can do it.
Good, Mike. I'm going to show you a gun. A gun is a wrong thing.
A gun is a wrong thing. I will make it go away.
Don't make it go away as soon as you see it.
Not?
Not. I will lift the gun and start to point it at you. Before I can get it pointed at you, make it go away. But don't stop me. Don't hurt me. Don't kill me. Don't do anything to me. Don't waste me as food, either.
Oh, I never would,
Mike said earnestly. When you discorporate my brother Jubal, I hope to be allowed to eat of you myself, praising and cherishing you with every bite until I grok you in fullness.
Harshaw controlled a reflex and answered gravely,
Thank you, Mike.
It is I who must thank you, my brother. And if it should be that I am selected before you, I hope that you will find me worthy of grokking, sharing me with Jill. You would share me with Jill? Please?
Harshaw glanced at Jill, saw that she kept her face serene, reflected that she was probably a rock-steady scrubbed nurse.
I will share you with Jill,
he said solemnly.
But Mike, none of us will be food anytime soon.